All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And if all goes according to plan, this is the first episode of 2021. So happy new year, everybody. And thank you so much for being here and for listening to the show. 2020 was just an awesome year, and there have been just an amazing amount of new listeners to the show, and I am looking forward to continuing it for a long time to come. So lots of Piecing It Together coming your way. So of course, make sure you are subscribed on your podcast app of choice. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser. Follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Check out our Patreon, produced by David Rosen. All those things. But, you know, most of all, you're here now. You're here with us today. So let's talk about a movie. Let's talk about a movie that I wanted to make sure to get a chance to talk about. I didn't love this movie. It's called The Midnight Sky. It stars and is directed by George Clooney. And it's out on Netflix. It came out a couple of weeks back already. But I wanted to make sure to do an episode on it. Because even though I didn't love it, I just thought it would be a good jumping off point for some good puzzle pieces and some good discussion. And joining me is Josh Bell from Awesome Movie Year, and we had a great conversation about it. I am really happy we got to do this one. So that is coming up now in a second. But also coming up last week, this week, like surrounding this episode is a whole bunch of special end of 2020 content. We've got the top 10 of the year, which would have just come up at the time that this is going up. That came out this past Friday. And we also have a top 10 first-time watches of 2020. That's going to be an interesting episode. And a top 5 documentaries of 2020. So a lot of great special episodes coming your way. So just want to make sure you all know about that. And then, of course, we'll be getting on to more regular episodes of Piecing It Together. But for now, let's get into The Midnight Sky. All right, Josh Bell is back with us to talk about the new George Clooney movie, The Midnight Sky. Josh, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am great. I am very much looking forward to our top 10 movies of the year episode. We're planning on recording later this week, but we got other movies to squeeze in first. So
yeah,
here we are talking about The Midnight Sky.
I think this movie is not going to be in that top 10 list episode.
It might just fall a little below there, but you know, we'll get our thoughts in on this episode, so that way at least we'll have mentioned it in the closing of 2020. This is an interesting movie. I didn't love it. As I've like been putting together my puzzle piece list and stuff like that, and like just kind of reflecting on it, I'm like, it wasn't that bad, and I'm glad we're gonna be talking about it. I think it's definitely a movie worth talking about, and there should be some good pieces. But I did want to ask you, though, up front, was this a movie? Obviously, we just kind of randomly were like, hey, well, let's do The Midnight Sky. But was this a movie that you were like really like looking forward to when it was coming out?
No, not really.
No.
I mean, I can't believe I'd have to see that movie or anything.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I think George Clooney as a director is not particularly, I mean, there's some decent movies, but he doesn't have a super great track record.
Right.
And the other thing is he doesn't have a particularly distinctive style. So mm-hmm. there's nothing like, oh, the new George Clooney movie, I know how that's going to be. And like, I really enjoy what he does. So I'm going to look forward to that. I think he's a good actor. And I like sci-fi movies. It was mm-hmm. based on a book that got a lot of acclaim, and it looked kind of intriguing to me. But
sure.
It wasn't at the top of my list of things that I wanted to see. I did, however, go out of my way to see this movie at the drive-in when
nice.
It was available, in part because I was excited because the drive-in here hasn't been showing that many Netflix films, even though some of the indoor theaters here have been. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to go see Mank, for example, on a big screen,
sure.
Which we could have done if I'd wanted to go to an indoor theater here, but they didn't have it at the drive-in. So I saw that they were playing it and I thought, oh yeah, I'm gonna go check that out, because I didn't want to go see Christmas Chronicles 2 at the drive-in, which they played for many weeks.
For sure.
So I was excited kind of about that. And I felt like this was a good movie to see on a big screen. And I almost wonder if my slightly more favorable response to it had to do with getting to see it that way.
Right.
It's possible. Right. I don't know. So no, it was one of those movies that I think in the long list of what's coming up at the end of the year that is prestigious and being pushed for awards, it kind of got lost there, I think. But once it was out, I thought, you know what, I want to see it. And I actually went, I ended up going on the last day before it closed because I wanted to make sure to see it before it left. And obviously there wasn't, I don't think it did a huge business.
Right.
There were, I think, like three other cars there with me maybe, and one of them left halfway through the movie. So
yeah, it does feel like one of those kind of movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing that, like, in the old times when you would go to an indie theater and some unsuspecting people would think, oh, George Clooney, he's a big, handsome movie star. Let's go see that movie. And then halfway through, they're like, what is this slow space nonsense? And then leave.
I need a nap.
Right.
I think what you're saying, though, about George Clooney, the director, is that absolutely right. And it sucks. Like, I honestly, it bugs me because I like him so much as an actor and just as, like, this personality. You know, I mean, he's one of the few movie stars who, like, I just feel like I'm rooting for in a way when he does direct a movie, when he does try to expand on what he does. And yeah, it's definitely a lot more miss than hit for sure.
Yeah, and he's obviously dedicated to it. It's not like sometimes there's actors and they direct one movie and you get the impression that they thought, like, hey, I'm going to try this out. And then they don't really follow through with it. But this has got to be his sixth or seventh movie as a director.
Right.
And I'm sure he's planning more. So it seems like he would have at some point developed a particular perspective or style or something. And you know, it doesn't happen. I mean, this movie doesn't feel like similar to other George Clooney directed movies in any way.
Not at all. Every one of them seems like, I would almost wonder if you go back through them all, if you'd find influence from whoever he had recently worked with, you know, in the previous years.
Yeah, I think that's something that's come up a lot. The idea that he works with these big directors because he's a big movie star. And they kind of rub off on him and he thinks, oh, you know what? I want to make a movie like the Coen brothers. I want to make a movie like Steven Soderbergh. I want to make a movie like Alfonso Cuarón, not to, you know, spoil our puzzle pieces here.
Right.
And he's George Clooney and he's famous. So he gets money and he gets his pick of projects. I don't know how hot this was as a project, but again, it was based on a very acclaimed novel. It was written, the screenplay, by Mark Smith, who wrote The Revenant, who's certainly a hot screenwriter. I could see this as a project that had, like, a lot of interest from different directors, but George Clooney's George Clooney, and so he gets it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I can't say I'm going to think, wow, what is George Clooney going to direct next?
And right,
can I see that?
Well, let's start getting into some of those puzzle pieces. Like you just joked, I'm sure some of those previous collaborators will come up in this conversation. But what do you got for your first piece?
Yeah, well, and I think also we'll probably have some a lot of overlap here. But my first piece will be one from a previous collaborator, and that is Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity, which I think is a pretty common thing that came up in response to this film. Of course, another movie set in space where there is a crisis and someone has to figure out how to save themselves. I mean, of course, in Gravity, Sandra Bullock wants to get home. You know, she wants to get back to Earth as opposed to not. But there's a whole storyline in Gravity about being able to contact someone on the radio and whether she can reach someone. And that's a remote outpost. And there's even, I hadn't thought about this, but there's, like, a short film, and I don't recall what it's called, but I think I've seen it, directed by Jonas Cuarón, Alfonso Cuarón's son, that's, like, from the perspective of the radio outpost that is in Gravity. And I really should have looked this up because I just thought of it in this moment. But it was released online as kind of a companion piece to Gravity. But certainly Gravity and the way that Cuarón stages these space disasters, and when you've got the debris coming at the space station in this movie, you can see Clooney probably spent a lot of time on the set of Gravity just in a harness waiting for something to happen and started thinking, What can I do that's like this?
Yeah. Well, and I think he also thought to himself, you know what would be cool? Two of these gravity stories happening at once, one in right. space and one on Earth, and I'll just go back and forth between them.
There you go. So certainly that's a that's an influence.
Yeah, definitely gravity was on my list as well. I'll just jump right to one that I think would also be on any puzzle piece list for this movie, and that is Christopher Nolan's Interstellar. And that's something that has been, I think it's been very common through a lot of modern sci-fi movies, is this drive to, like, you know, get some kind of human connection, emotional thing with a, like, either a father-daughter in both these cases, or some kind of just relationship story in the scope of a big giant sci-fi epic, and where that's really the point of it all, not the big sci-fi gigantic thing that's going on. But also, you know, aside from just that, which is the main point of both of these movies, there's, you know, also the plot with, you know, trying to find a habitable planet out there somewhere, which is also what kind of kicks Interstellar into gear with humans, you know, destroying the planet and needing to find a new home. So there's a lot of parallels there that connect these two movies.
Yeah. And I don't think Clooney, he never worked with Christopher Nolan, did he?
Not yet. Not yeah. yet. No,
but I'm sure it'll happen. Met. I'm sure they've yeah. hung out.
Sure. So.
And by the way, the short film connected to Gravity is called a word that I'm going to mispronounce, is called Aningak. Something okay. like that. It's like an Inuit word. And so it's from the perspective of this Inuit fisherman trying to contact Sandra Bullock's character.
So for a second there, I thought you were going to say that was Gravity backwards.
No, but... that would have been something. But I assume it's some sort of Inuit word. I don't know what it means. But that is that film that was released in connection with Gravity. So
interesting. I should check that out.
Yeah, I think I probably watched it online and then forgot about it. But
right.
It's there.
Well, what do you got for your next piece?
So keeping with the theme of crisis in space, I am going to go with Apollo 13, the Ron Howard film based on, of course, a true story about astronauts in distress with Tom Hanks. And so much of what is great, Apollo 13 first is a great movie. And so much of what makes Apollo 13 really good is not just the crisis in space, but the interaction between the astronauts and the crew on the ground and how they have to work together in order to solve those problems and the back and forth communication. And there's not as much of that, obviously, in this movie. It takes a really long time for them to actually establish communication. Mm-hmm. But I think there's, you know, that element of kind of talking across the void, and when things are going really wrong, to be able to speak to somebody back on the ground or to speak to the people out in space and talk them through things is important. And of course, also, I think from that movie, as you pointed out, or you retweeted somebody, the slingshot maneuver,
right.
I think
right.
is must be a real thing that comes up there and always in any sci-fi movie when they need to use the gravity of a planet to kind of get momentum to go somewhere.
So. It's funny you bring that up, because I was just thinking about that, like, to the point of Apollo 13, I forgot that they did that in that one as well, but that's also Interstellar, they do that, and that kind of brings me to, like, to me, the biggest problem with this movie is it really just feels like a collection of tropes and things that you've seen in other sci-fi movies just kind of all mashed together. And it's like, you know, some of those things are fine because they're either fun or exciting or, you know, they just work. But it's like when you're watching a movie and it's just one after another, after another, after another, it starts to kind of get grating, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, it's okay. You're right that it definitely combines a lot of familiar elements from other sci-fi movies. I'm usually of the opinion that if you do a bunch of familiar things and you do them really well, or you combine a bunch of things that we've seen before, but they fit together in an interesting way, then that's okay. Not every movie has to reinvent storytelling.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there are certain points in this movie where you're thinking, okay, we've seen this before and we know how it's going to go. And he's not doing something particularly interesting with it. He's just kind of right. playing it out. So
yeah.
Yes. But the slingshot maneuver is something I'm okay with. Again, because if it was in Apollo 13, it must be real. And so if it's like a genuine way Especially since no one has really actually gone that far out in space for real. If it's actually the way that theoretically you would do that, then it's okay. I mean, to me, then it's like complaining about, oh, they had rockets or something. Like, well, that's how you get to space. So of course they had rockets.
Do you think there are NASA scientists who are just like dying for the opportunity to try it?
There probably are. And of course, there are probably other NASA scientists who would tell us that we're stupid. And actually the slingshot is not a good way to get anywhere.
Completely fake and stupid. And
yeah. But I mean, I've seen it. I'm pretty sure it was in, there was that, this isn't one of my puzzle pieces, but could be that Hilary Swank Netflix series Away, where they travel to Mars. I'm pretty sure they used it there. And another really bad Netflix series with Katie Sackhoff called Another Life that I had to watch a bunch of, where they're exploring deep space. I'm pretty sure they used it there at one point too. So it's all over Netflix, at least.
Sounds like it would make a really good article for you, Josh.
Yeah, just, maybe it, so. Just
figuring out if that's a real thing.
Something.
Talk
yeah,
to some scientists.
Some research on that.
Well, I will go to a different puzzle piece. A movie that's been coming up a lot lately for me. I don't know why. I think it's maybe it's in the air because of the forthcoming sequels that are supposedly going to happen. But that's James Cameron's Avatar. And this planet, which they specifically say is a moon, but then they end up referring to it as a planet multiple times throughout the movie. But it's just like this perfect, beautiful, picturesque place. It's like, you know, it's just heaven, basically. And I mean, how could it be anything but if it's going to be the, you know, the savior place for humankind to continue on? So I just thought it was very kind of modeled after the whole Pandora planet from Avatar in a way.
Yeah, it's Colorado. That's how Felicity Jones, I think, describes it at one point.
So. Which Colorado's pretty nice.
I sure, like I wouldn't mind living in Colorado. I used to live in Colorado as a kid. I'd go
nice.
Back. Yeah, and I love how it is a moon. It's one of Jupiter's moons, but they explain away. They're like, oh, we just had never seen it before.
Yeah.
it was hidden behind some other moon or something.
Sure, yeah.
That's how things work.
That's
right, apparently. I'm sure some NASA scientists would definitely tell us that that is not. There's not a bunch of previously undiscovered perfect moons of Jupiter. That's a thing.
That's amazing. Well, what do you got next?
Next I'll go to another director that George Clooney has worked with, and that's Steven Soderbergh and Solaris, which, of course, starred George Clooney and was Steven Soderbergh's remake of an Andrei Tarkovsky movie, which is based on a novel, so it's multiple iterations of it, but specifically the Soderbergh version, because it has Clooney in it. And it also has a significant plot element of characters seeing sort of apparitions of their dead or missed loved ones. And in that movie, it's very clear that the people are not real. It's not really a twist. It's these astronauts are on a space station orbiting this alien planet, and there's some sort of intelligence or entity on the planet that is attempting to kind of communicate with them by manifesting as their loved ones. And you always understand that it's this kind of alien manifestation, but it's still difficult for the characters to like reject that when it looks like a real person that they cared about.
Right.
So it's not quite the same, but certainly we have that, you know, it's the big twist in this movie, which is really annoying and hokey and just jerking the audience around in a unfair kind of way.
Was there a moment where you thought that kid was like a real kid?
I mean, see, this is maybe, I felt like when the twist came, I was like, oh, how did I not figure that out? And I guess, see, this is to me where I was kind of into this movie at first because I was buying it.
Okay.
And they have a moment at the beginning where everyone else is evacuating the station. And one woman says, where is my child? And someone else says, oh, I'm sure they're on the plane already. And so they set up this kind of seed of like, maybe they did leave a kid behind.
Yeah, it's a good misdirect for sure.
Right. And I was like, okay, it's a sci-fi movie. I'll buy that just like I'll buy anything else in this movie, you know? But then certainly when that happened, I was like, oh, of course. Like, that's so obvious of what's happening here. Right. But it's, of course, it's a double twist where not only is he talking to a fake person, but it turns out that she's a fake version of a real person who is Felicity Jones, who is his daughter on the space station. Or
twists upon twists.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And both of those twists were... you know what? Honestly, the fake person twist, I could go with more. The twist of Felicity Jones being his daughter and it having that whole interstellar heartstring tugging thing, like that bothered me more. I don't know how you felt about it.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, because like just the vast amount of people that his daughter could be, and it's the one person when there's only like four people left in the universe that he's talking to is just ridiculous. I mean, there's plenty of space madness in movies. You can talk to an invisible person or an imaginary person, you know, that's possible.
Right. And it's clear that, I mean, he's isolated, he's sick, you know, it doesn't, it's certainly within realistic possibility that he's hallucinating, but
yeah.
And then there's also at one point he's going through that list of all the space missions and, you know, they're all been canceled or lost or whatever. And so there were so many people in space.
Yes.
And the only one that's still active is the one with his daughter on.
Amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, speaking of that, I'll go on to my next piece, to that kind of going crazy in space thing. I'm going to go with Duncan Jones' Moon. A great movie about that, like, isolation and loneliness and just the kind of effects it can have on a person who's left to stay behind on some kind of a space science experiment. And I mean, you know, he's not in space, but I mean, it might as well be. It feels like a spaceship where he's working and all that. And so, you know, obviously a lot of very different things happen in Moon with the clones and all that kind of stuff. But you know, just that feeling of isolation and the effects it has on the mind, I think makes it a really good parallel here.
Yeah, that's a great movie. And that movie pulls off a twist that
yes.
this does not.
I also should say, just real quick before moving on, Moon, absolutely incredible score. And I don't want to shit on this movie too much because I like I said, it's not terrible, but I love Desplat's scores, and I think this is one of the worst ones he's done, honestly.
Yeah, the score is really bad, and it bothered me more as the movie went on, and especially because in that third act, it leans so hard on the sentimentality and the sappiness of the whole father-daughter thing and the doomed people on the mission, when it really shifts and the story is more about the people on the spaceship and less about George Clooney on Earth. Sure. And then this, like, the score goes along with the movie as a whole, and it's just one more element of like just gooey sentiment that
yeah
it's bad.
It very much is. Well, what do you got next?
Well, I'm gonna go with another space movie about trying to save Earth, which is a movie that I like that I think is underrated, and it's Danny Boyle's Sunshine, which involves a crew trying to restart the sun, I think is what it is, and it sounds really dumb. But it's a very intense, well-acted movie. And it gets a lot of that stuff that we have. It was weird. I don't know if it was weird to me, and maybe it goes with the sort of like sentimental tone of this, but everyone on the spaceship in this movie is like really nice to each other, and nobody freaks out, and there's not really much conflict and whatever. And Sunshine is not that at all. It's very much tense and dramatic, and lots of dangerous stuff happens and people turn on each other and whatever. But I think it's done really well. And I feel like at the time, at least, it was generally not that well reviewed. And I don't know if it's maybe been reassessed as Danny Boyle has gone on to become, you know, a major filmmaker, although he's got a lot. He's very hit and miss. But
sure.
I haven't seen that movie since it came out, but I remember liking it a lot and putting it on my top 10 list and thinking that it was underrated. So, you know, maybe I should see it again.
That's actually a movie that I have never seen. I've always wanted to, and just never got around to it. But I certainly know, you know, of it. And yeah, it definitely makes sense as a good piece there. And Danny Boyle is pretty hit or miss, but I got to check that out.
Yeah, I mean, but when Danny Boyle makes a good movie, like, it's good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, definitely. And Danny Boyle also, I bet, has met George Clooney.
So. I would say that's probably a pretty good chance. Well, I will go to another piece. And this is a movie I haven't seen since it came out. And I could be completely misremembering the themes of it and all that. But I was thinking of another George Clooney movie, Jason Reitman's Up in the Air. And the idea of, you know, focusing on the wrong things in life and not, you know, focusing on the things that are important, just focusing on work and all that kind of stuff and being too driven and ignoring the, you know, family and things like that and things that really should be more important to you. And that ends up, I think, being like the main idea here with this daughter that he's never connected with, and now he gets that opportunity to have some kind of closure with. So it's obviously a much more, you know, spacey sci-fi version of that idea, but it does come from the same place.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie since it came out either, but those themes I think are probably handled better there. And really, as you say, he gets, so George Clooney, Augustine something, he gets mm-hmm. his chance to have closure with the daughter because he obviously knows that she's his daughter and who she is, but she right. doesn't know that he's her father. And so he deprives her of that closure. She spent her whole life presumably not knowing who her father is. Even before the world ended, she didn't know. And now she's going to go off and be one of like two humans left in the universe. And she still doesn't know. And even though he could have just told her.
That's pretty dark.
Right? I mean, and it's not meant to be dark. We're meant to kind of feel gooey at the end where, oh, this father-daughter had their moment of connection at the end of the world, but he just leaves her to go off to space Colorado without him and never know.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was a dick and he just wanted her to not have to deal with having a dick for a dad. Right?
I mean, he clearly was a dick. That was the point. Yeah. But it was supposed to be a redemption moment there, I think, and it didn't work.
It did not work. That's great. Oh, man. What do you got next?
So, okay, my next puzzle piece is a TV show. It's not one of those Netflix shows, but is instead a post-apocalypse show called Last Man on Earth from Fox, which was a comedy show starring Will Forte as not really the last man on Earth, but one of the few last people following an apocalyptic virus. And one of the long-running subplots on that movie or on that show was the fact that Will Forte's character had a brother who was an astronaut on the space station and was up in space when the world ended and needed to find a way to, again, in this case, to return to Earth and eventually did. It played out. The character is played by Jason Sudeikis, who obviously did not have time to appear in many episodes. So he would be in like one or two episodes per season or maybe a little more in the later seasons when he finally made it to Earth. Spoiler alert. And that was a show that was very, I don't know if you ever watched it. It was very inconsistent.
Yeah, I never did, actually. I always wanted to. I heard it was great.
It was great at times, but it seemed like the longer it went on, the more they didn't really know. It was really built, like, despite being a comedy, it was built on having, like, sudden twists at the end of, like, every episode, one of which was, in the early season, the reveal of Jason Sudeikis' character on the space station. And over time, they just really could not sustain that and just got more and more ridiculous, and the characters were really grating, and I stopped watching it before it ended. But I thought that was an interesting... I mean, that goofy show has a very similar storyline to what's done here. And I mean, I could have gone for Jason Sudeikis to be on the space station there with or the spaceship with Felicity Jones, and
that would have given a little bit of nice levity to this. That'd be
maybe
cool.
Yeah.
Well, I will go to another piece, and you know, obviously Clooney has a whole thing with his buddy Brad Pitt, and so I'm sure that his last big movie, Ad Astra, probably rubbed off on him a little bit in the making of this. Another, you know, big relationship issues in space, in that case, daddy issues, but you know, it's the same thing like I was talking about earlier with this kind of thing of taking what seems like a big giant sci-fi epic and making it really about, you know, about that relationship or emotion or closure in this case, you know, things like that. And I remember back when I did an episode on Ad Astra, I'd say half of the other movies we talked about so far came up as puzzle pieces. So definitely cut from the same cloth, let's just say.
Yeah, and also not very good.
Also not very good, yes. Poor Brad Pitt and George Clooney.
Yeah, but I feel like James Gray is another director who probably met George Clooney. And you know,
I think that's probably true.
I think, again, you know, all of those guys, Chris Nolan, Danny Boyle, James Gray, I can see Clooney with like a mood board in his house mm-hmm. with these like directors' names on them. And he's all just like wanting to make a movie like they do.
I got to say, I would love to see a George Clooney starring James Gray movie. I think that would be good.
Oh yeah. See, I just am not a James Gray fan at all, but I could totally envision that happening. That seems like something that should have already happened. So
yeah, definitely. Old man, beard Clooney. Definitely. Bring
Absolutely.
It on. Well, what do you got next?
So I'm going to go with a non-space movie. I think it's the only non-space movie that I managed to put on this list. And is also is a very bad movie called Adrift with Shailene Woodley. And I was just trying to think of movies about, and this is sort of on the Clooney end of things, you know, in the two aspects of the story about someone who's stranded in the mm-hmm. harsh wilderness and is trying to get back to something. In that movie, which is based on a true story, Shailene Woodley plays this woman who has gone with her, I think it's her fiance or boyfriend, and they've decided to do this long ocean voyage on a little boat, and it's this romantic thing for them. And then they get hit by a storm, and the boat is damaged, and they're off course, and I think she has no radio, and she has to get back to safety. And it's based on a true story, so it's this kind of triumph over adversity thing that this woman did it. She saved herself and mm-hmm. she got back to safety. But in the movie, it appears that her boyfriend or fiance or whatever survives the storm initially, but is injured. And so they spend the whole movie together trying to get to safety, and they're talking to each other and she's helping him. You know, he's got his broken leg or whatever it is, and he can't do anything. But mm-hmm. in real life, he died. And so the movie adds this like hallucination twist to this real lady's real life that
Weird.
Is not real. Like, she didn't really hallucinate the dead guy for her entire sea voyage. And they just throw it in as, and it becomes a big twist. You assume he's alive until you get a twist at the end when you realize that she's alone on the boat. And yeah, it's just bad. And I just have to wonder what this real lady who went through this real experience thought. They made a movie about her life and they inserted a hallucinated dead boyfriend into it.
That's incredible. That is truly like one of the great, you know, twists gone wrong that I've heard. That's really freaking great. I actually hadn't seen that movie. It looked kind of bad, and so I just never got around to it, but I almost kind of want to see it now just for that.
It's not, I mean, the thing is like the twist isn't handled in this sort of like insane way. It's presented
right,
in this very
right.
like somber way, and you're like, okay. And otherwise it's just this kind of like run-of-the-mill survival yeah. drama. It's not the worst thing, but it's not good really.
It's more the fact that they did it at all.
Right. And I know, like, yeah. when the movie came out, I didn't see it. It got actually a lot of good reviews. And if this woman was not on board with what they did to her life story, she kept quiet about it because she did interviews mm-hmm. and stuff talking about her ordeal. And she never complained that they've re-traumatized her by, you know, resurrecting her dead boyfriend or whatever. So it
sure.
just struck me as very weird. So
that is hilarious. I love that. Oh, man. Well, I'll go with my last piece. Another one that I think has come up in a lot of reviews of this movie, and that's The Martian. Ridley Scott, starring Matt Damon, and it just kind of shows the like the minutiae and day-to-day of just being stuck alone on a space station. Again, a research facility or whatever, but it feels very much like a space station. I keep calling it that. But, you know, it's just stuck in this place alone and going through that whole day-to-day lifestyle of living alone on that kind of thing, at least until his hallucinated daughter shows up. But, you know.
Well, and one great thing about The Martian is, like Apollo 13, so much of what's exciting about that movie is the communication between him and this whole ground crew that's doing everything that they can to rescue him and bring him back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like that aspect, you know, to those kinds of films.
Yeah. And also, like I joked earlier about, it's like two gravities happening at once. It's like to have a way to connect them, you know, it definitely helps to, like, you know, make it more than just watching this guy die on a research facility.
Right. Although, to be honest, I think I would have liked this movie more if they cut out all of those scenes until you see him communicating with them. Or maybe you don't even see it. Maybe you just hear the voice on the radio or something.
Yeah,
like that.
You're probably right about that. Especially the fixing the antennas on the spacewalk and all that. None of that was necessary.
No, it was all just ripped off from Gravity.
Yeah.
and other sci-fi movies, but very much Gravity.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you got any more pieces?
I have one more space movie. And this is really mainly, although it does involve like a space crisis eventually, I haven't seen this movie in a really, I saw this movie in at a test screening before it came out. And so I haven't seen this movie in like 25 years or more, but it's Space Cowboys with Clint Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones and Donald Sutherland and James Garner as these like old former test pilots that are recruited for a space mission because they have to fix a thing that only they know how to fix or something, and then stuff goes wrong. And I don't know. I don't remember it being any good. But other than it being a space crisis movie, the thing that I remember most about this movie is it does something that I had not seen in a movie until watching this Clooney movie, which is there are flashback scenes of these old characters played by Clint Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones, etc., in their days as young pilots, and they're played by younger actors. But their voices are the older actors. And that is exactly what Clooney does in these flashback scenes with Ethan Peck as young Clooney with Clooney's voice. And it's just, I know right now we have all this like de-aging technology. And so you could make someone look younger. Maybe they didn't have the budget for that. But I feel like if you're not going to do that, just have Ethan Peck talk like Ethan Peck. It's not hard for us to figure out that this is meant to be the younger version of this character. But to me, it was so disconcerting in this movie watching him talk with George Clooney's voice coming out of his mouth. That
is so weird.
Yeah. And I always remember, I couldn't remember a single detail. I was telling you before we went on the internet, I had to go to Wikipedia to remember any detail at all about that dumb Space Cowboys movie. Right. But the bit with Clint Eastwood's voice and Tommy Lee Jones's voice, and they have very distinctive voices
coming out of these
random younger actors' mouths has stuck with me for all that time.
That is pretty amazing. Yeah. And I forgot about that, actually, that it's Clooney's voice coming out of the guy. And I don't know, like, I did think that casting was weird of young Clooney. I didn't really think it looked like him. I eventually picked up on, oh, okay, that's supposed to be him younger. But yeah, maybe it was just because they were worried that people wouldn't pick up on it or something. That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, and if that's the case, it's just like lazy filmmaking. Like, come on, right. Do better, Clooney.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah, and poor Ethan Peck, I know him mainly because he plays Spock on Star Trek Discovery, and he gets to speak in his own voice, but very much working in the shadow of another actor there too.
For sure. So how long do you think it's going to be before a Space Cowboys reboot with Brad Pitt and George Clooney?
Oh, man. Maybe. I don't know if that movie was at all successful, but yeah. They should definitely not do that.
Maybe David Oyelowo or whatever. Yeah. Get him in there too.
Why not? I mean, you could see it. Clooney definitely leaning into being older now with that giant beard. Although
I like old Clooney.
I like it too. I thought he rocked that beard, and why not, you know? But I guess I was reading about the book, and I didn't read the book, but I just read about it. And I guess the character in the book is even older, is like 78 years old. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I had assumed, oh, maybe Clooney wrote this for himself and it was supposed to be someone younger, but it's the opposite.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Well, I'll go ahead. Yeah, that is a weird bit to go out on. But I will do the finished puzzle, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts here. Finished puzzle for The Midnight Sky includes Gravity, Interstellar, Apollo 13, Avatar, Solaris, Moon, Sunshine, Up in the Air, Last Man on Earth, Ad Astra, Adrift, The Martian, and Space Cowboys. And man, did we cover every sci-fi movie from the last 10 years.
So much space in this.
Yeah. Yeah. We sure did. Did you have any other thoughts we didn't quite get into?
Not really. I mean, I will say again that I feel like I'm a big defender of this movie only because I didn't hate it. And and I think it does have an intriguing beginning, and I'm not opposed to what it's trying to do. It just doesn't, I mean, the last third of it or so really just leans so hard on that sentiment that it doesn't work. But I wanted to like it, and I was hoping, and I will say that seeing, I mean, obviously, like, recommending that anybody go see anything on a big screen right now is sort of a problematic thing to do. But if you are somehow able to safely do that, I feel like seeing it on a big screen helped the experience for me.
Yeah, I would imagine it would. I mean, it is a good looking movie, you know, even when it's just in these closed in areas. It still has a lot of, interesting sci-fi visual stuff happening. And like you said, it's definitely not a bad movie, but it just has a lot of these glaring problems, and especially those tropes and things like that, that are just like, oh, that's just like that. That's just like that. Like, it goes a step beyond our whole puzzle piece thing here to the point of, oh, I've seen this a million times,
Right, right. But I do think if you like that kind of thing, if you're a big sci-fi fan and you don't mind seeing movies that have similar elements, that this is it, some aspects of it are well done. So I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to say I would recommend it, but I mean, there's so many other things to watch that really,
right.
Like, if you're sitting at home, but everyone's sitting at home. So, if you have Netflix, there's something better to watch on Netflix, I'm sure.
Hey Josh, speaking of better things to watch, have you seen a movie recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I will. Yeah, I wanted to make sure not to overlap because we're about to do this big top 10 movies of the year episode, and I didn't just want to repeat myself, but I'm going to pick a movie that won't quite make my list, but that I did watch fairly recently as a sort of catch up for the year. And I think, Dave, that you watched as well, is called Swallow with Haley Bennett, which is really good. I mean, it may not be in my top 10, but I definitely recommend it. She's great in that movie as this sort of disaffected housewife who develops this condition where she swallows not edible objects, and it's yes. sort of this manifestation of her suburban ennui, and she's really good in it. It creates a very, it's not a horror movie, but it creates a very disturbing atmosphere. And I think it wraps itself up maybe a little too neatly at the end, but as a character study of this woman, it's quite effective. So I liked it. And I know it's now streaming on Showtime if people have that. And I had heard about it earlier in the year and, got to it eventually. So Swallow.
Yeah, no, I was glad that I finally caught up with that, because I know a lot of people in our Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group talked about it earlier in the year when it came out. And it's definitely a good recommendation. People should definitely check it out.
I agree.
So, Josh, why don't you tell people about what's going on with Awesome Movie Year and everything else you're up to?
Yeah, Awesome Movie Year, still a thing. It's we've been talking about the films of 1984 in our most recent season. So we've got quite a few more episodes of that yet to come. And there's tons of big blockbusters in that season, so that's been cool. Hopefully people are checking that out because there are movies that they're familiar with, and we have more of those to come. And you can find me. I'm at joshbellhateseverything.com, which I am in the process of writing something on my top 10 movies. So there'll be the content there for the first time in 8 months or something. more active on social media at Josh Bell Hates Everything on Facebook and at Signal Bleed on Twitter. And if you are here in the local Vegas area, you can watch me on KTNV Channel 13 on Fridays at 11 a.m.
Awesome. Well, Josh, as always, thank you so much for being here. And maybe next time we'll do one that we both really liked a lot.
I look forward to that.
Have you been thinking about a film for quite some time now? Have you got nowhere to turn to talk about it? Well, the Film for Thought podcast is here for you. Every fortnight, I invite a guest on to talk about any film of your choice. It could be old or new, controversial or classic. If you have some thoughts about films, I want to discuss them. New episodes drop every second Friday, so make sure to come along and check out the Film for Thought podcast.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Midnight Sky. Thank you, Josh Bell, for joining me again on that one. Everybody, make sure to check out Awesome Movie Year. They are currently getting towards the end of their sixth season, this time on the films of 1984, but that is six seasons worth of content, lots of great podcast episodes on a bunch of other Awesome Movie Years as well. So definitely check that podcast out. And I just wanted to thank everybody again for listening to Piecing It Together. If you're not already, make sure you're subscribed to wherever it is you listen to podcasts. And you can, of course, rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. I love hearing from people and hearing what you think of the show and all the new listeners we've been getting lately. I definitely want to know what you think of the show. If you'd maybe like to join me for an episode, I'm always looking for new co-hosts. And, what you think maybe we could be doing better on the show, because I want to keep making it better and you know, keep making it a great show for everybody. So get in touch and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. Don't forget about our Patreon, produced by David Rosen, which combines content from Piecing It Together, Awesome Movie Year, as well as my music career. Lots of great content on there. I'm going to be posting a bunch of new music-related stuff really soon over there. And as a matter of fact, I had this Midnight Sky episode up on there for a week before we posted it. So you may be listening to this right now on there before you, boy, my mind just went into a weird time loop, like a Nolan movie or something. But yeah, check out the Patreon. So let's close this thing out with a piece of music like I always do. And I'm sure I've played this one before, but whenever we do one of these kind of space epic type movies, it makes sense to play. This is a song called The Void from my fourth album, A Different Kind of Dream. There's also a really cool music video for it that I made out of public domain footage and put all kinds of effects together and stuff, and that's available on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/musicbydavidrosen. But yeah, this is called The Void, very spacey track, so I think it's a good fit here with the midnight sky. So enjoy The Void, check out A Different Kind of Dream wherever you listen to music, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.